The Mysterious Old Radio Listening Society Podcast.
Welcome to the Mysterious Old Radio Listening Society, a podcast dedicated to suspense, crime, and horror stories from the golden age of radio. I'm Eric.
I'm Tim.
And I'm Joshua.
We love mysterious old-time radio stories, but do they stand the test of time? That's what we're here to find out.
Last year, to celebrate the anniversary of our debut, Joshua dedicated 2 weeks of the podcast to give Eric and I gift episodes, productions curated to specifically cater to our individual tastes. This year, I wanted to take up the challenge and return the favor. I missed our anniversary, but it's not too late to offer up my selections as Christmas gifts. Last week, Eric received his episode, The Ghost Locomotive from the Mysterious Traveler. This week, we listened to my gift for Joshua, Murder on the Train, from The Adventures of Leonidas Witherall.
Before this radio adaptation, Leonidas Witherall came from a popular series of novels by Phoebe Atwood Taylor, writing under the pseudonym Alice Tilton. According to critic Dillis Wynn, Mrs. Taylor is the mystery equivalent to Buster Keaton. Regarding the Leonidas Witherall novels, Wynn said, "These books don't make all that much sense, but they go a long way in proving that making sense is immaterial. A guffaw is more vital. Tilton books are so busy, so complicated, so Marx Brothers. That makes them sound as if they have a plot, doesn't it? Bad assumption. They drift from incident to incident with the style of the Crash'em cars at a carnival."
To the best of our knowledge, only 7 episodes of the series still exist. The Adventures of Leonidas Witherall ran from June 4, 1944 to May 6, 1945 on the Mutual Network. Walter Hamden played Leonidas, and his housekeeper, Mrs. Mollett, was played by Ethel Remy, and then Agnes Moorhead.
Or maybe it was Agnes Moorhead and then Ethel Remy. Different internet sources provide conflicting accounts. Having listened to most of the surviving episodes, including the June 4th premiere episode, the role sounds to my ear to be consistently played by the same actress, who I did not recognize as having the distinctive voice of Agnes Moorhead, but some accounts say that Moorhead inaugurated the role on CBS, so perhaps there was some audition episode that CBS turned down before the show was found a home on the Mutual Network, or maybe people on the internet get things wrong sometimes. Either way, here is Joshua's gift, Murder on the Train, originally broadcast October 8th, 1944.
It's late at night, and a chill has set in. You're alone, and the only light you see is coming from an antique radio. Listen to the sounds coming from the speaker, listen to the music, and listen to the voices.
Don't open that coffin. You know, there isn't just a dead body in there. There might also be... Oh, the lid's coming off. Now we can see inside.
WOR presents the distinguished American actor, Walter Hamden, in The Adventures of Leonidas Witherall.
Leonidas Witherall's always getting mixed up in murder.
You wouldn't think so. He looks just like Shakespeare.
It's his beard, and he's head of an important school for boys in New England.
He also writes thriller stories on the side, the Lieutenant Hazeltine stories.
And as director of a school, Leonidas has been called to Chicago for an educator's convention, hasn't he, Mr. Hamden?
Yes, in his home at 40 Birch Hill Road, Dalton, Bill Shakespeare, as his friends call him, is about to leave for the railroad station, valise, pince-nez, beard, and all. And he's to be accompanied by the neighborhood housekeeper, the indomitable Mrs. Mollett.
Forget anything, Mr. Witherall?
No, I remembered everything, Mrs. Mollett. How about you?
Oh, I brought everything with me when I came to work this morning.
I'm still amazed at our good luck in getting Professor Murky's reservation for you. Too bad he's ill, of course.
My sister will be so surprised to see me. Poor thing, she's so sick.
Come on, we've just a few minutes to get to the station. Not that I'm anxious to be at the convention.
Well, what's a convention like?
Well, a man says nothing, nobody listens, and then everybody disagrees.
Must be interesting.
Uh-huh.
Your delegation using the whole car?
No, just half of it. Shall we go? Train leaves at 4:20, and it's 4 o'clock now. I'll take all the baggage.
Well, I can take these small things. Well, I hope there's some nice chummy folks on the train. Wonder who the other passengers will be.
Well, Sparrow, Where's the dough?
I'll give it to you on the train, Danny.
You've been stalling me, Sparrow. It's almost 5 weeks.
This time it's the McCoy, Danny. You'll get it.
When's the book going to be published?
In about a month.
Did you change the manuscript?
No.
Just the way I wrote it, huh?
Just the way I wrote it, you mean?
Yeah, you wrote it. Like Mahatma Gandhi, you wrote it.
We went into that, Danny. Too many times. I got the manuscript.
You stole it.
Why'd you get so technical? I gave it to the publisher. Margie swore I wrote it. It's an open and shut case, ain't it?
Margie double-crossed me. She knows it's my script. She helped me work on it. You're using the same title for the book?
Sure. The Big Shot, that's it. The Big Shot. It's a very hot piece of literature, Danny. When a great guy himself gets a look at that book, he's liable to blow his top.
Yeah. Or yours.
I'm taking that chance. It's worth it to get back at him. Every racket of his, every job he ever pulled, it's all in there in that book.
The book I sweated over.
You'll get paid, don't worry. You just be on that train, the 4:20 for Chicago.
And if I don't get it then, Sparrow, I'm gonna cut your heart out.
I know.
I'd kind of like to do it anyway.
Just be on the train. You'll get the payoff there.
So long.
You'll get the payoff, all right. The final payoff.
Track 8, the commander for Chicago. Track 8, the commander for Chicago.
It's 4:20, Mr. Witherall. Why doesn't the train leave?
Look out on the platform, Mrs. Mullett, and you'll find the answer. See the men out there?
Oh, yes. Say, that's a funeral.
Well, sort of. They look sad. That's what's delaying us.
Poor fellas. Bet the dead man was a good friend of theirs. The looks are sad.
They're putting the coffin into the baggage car now. It won't be long.
Just my luck to be on a train with a coffin. They say it's very bad luck.
Track 8, the commander for Chicago. Track 8, the commander for Chicago.
Easy now, Rhett. Easy, don't drop it.
Look sad, you dope, look sad. This is supposed to be a funeral.
Yeah.
I never thought a coffin weighed so much.
All right, slide it on the wagon. The guys will roll it into the baggage car. Now, here we go.
Hey, listen, Benny. Why'd the boss want to pull the job this way? Ain't this an awful screwy way to do it?
He said it's the only way, and we got to do it. Furthermore, we can't miss either. After the coffin's in the baggage car, I got the whole plan doped out.
It's a good thing you got strong knives.
Yeah, it ain't so hard. I take these things for granted. Besides, Brain says if I miss, it's going to be awful sad for me.
Hey, they got the coffin inside.
Yeah, I better get on. They'll be leaving.
Goodbye, everybody. Let me see.
The commander for Chicago.
Hey, Benny. Don't forget, the baby we're after is in compartment 6, car 5.
Yeah, I know. Boss is on car 5, too.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Red.
You're going to sit here by the coffin, mister?
Yeah, I'm the guy. Going to ride to Chicago with a stiff. Nice company I pick, huh?
Well, if you've any time free from the convention in Chicago, Mr. Witherell, just drop over and see my collection. Finest butterfly collection in the Middle West.
Yes, Mr. Lear, I'll be all aflutter to see it.
My, it's late, isn't it? And here I've been talking almost forever to you and Mrs. Mullett.
Oh, not forever, Mr. Lear. Just seems that way.
Well, it was a real pleasure to make your acquaintance. Mrs. Mullett?
Good night, Mr. Lear.
Mr. Witherell?
Good night.
I'm going back to the observation car. I always take 10 deep breaths of pure air before I go to bed.
Huh?
Puts new oxygen in the lungs. Oh. See you in the morning.
Help you with the compartment, sir?
Yes, Porter, thank you.
Well, I'd better be going to my compartment, too. I'll be in number 4, you know. Then there's the one next door to here. That's 6. This one's number 8, isn't it?
That's right, ma'am.
All right.
I'll make up number 4, ma'am. Be back soon.
Listen, Mr. Witherall. You hear them next door in number 6? Why, they're arguing so loud, it comes right through the wall.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I double-crossed you, so what?
You low-down rat.
Evidently, they're not honeymooning.
Go on, tell the police. You wouldn't get the first base. The Big Shot's going to be printed. I'm the guy that wrote it as far as everybody's concerned, and you're just a nuisance. Now, what can you do about that?
I gave up Danny on account of you. I helped him work on the book. Then I stepped all over him and swore you wrote it. And why? Because you said you and I was going places together.
You gave official testimony. You can't perjure yourself. You're up a tree, and I got you there. So what?
Danny's on this train. Did you know that?
Sure, I told him to be here. Told him I'd pay off.
But me, I don't get a nickel.
Not a cent. Besides, quit chasing me around. You annoy me.
You don't really mean that. They used to like me so much.
Ah, embarrassing. We better stop eavesdropping, Mrs. Mullet.
Why, not in your life. Just when it's getting interesting.
Let go of me. You're getting that cheap powder all over my shoulders.
Don't you feel like kissing me goodnight?
Get out. You make me sick.
You don't want no part of me, huh? I get no money, no nothing. Okay. We'll see who wins the last round.
Oh, hang up, will you? I want to go to bed.
When I get finished with you, they'll put you to bed with a shovel.
Mrs. Mullet, yeah. That's hardly the sort of idyllic conversation to make a nice lullaby.
Well, I suppose you're right. Well, good night, Mr. Witherall.
Good night, Mrs. Mullet. See you in the morning.
I don't like this train at all. Huh? People threatening each other. Then back there in that baggage car, that coffin. Oh. I can feel something horrible's going to happen. Something that'd freeze your blood in your veins.
Tut, tut.
Good night, Mr. Witherall. Pleasant dreams.
Good night.
Wake up, mister. It's 2:30 a.m. Coming into Cleveland. Wake up.
George.
Huh? Oh, yes, sir.
George, it may be necessary to wake my fellow passenger in the next compartment there, but could you do it with a shade less violence? I've been trying desperately to fall asleep.
Well, he's going to miss Cleveland. I've got to get him up.
Yes, but all you have to do is to wake one man. You're not supposed to blitzkrieg the train.
He paid me $5 to make sure he gets off of Cleveland. I practically broke down this compartment door, but I can't get him out.
Well, keep trying. The lucky fellow's probably a heavy sleeper.
Good night.
Good night, sir. Sleep well. Oh, I'll do it real gentle.
Wake up in there! Here comes Cleveland!
George, why don't you open his door and go in, eh?
Oh, it ain't right. I'm not supposed to do that.
Well, if you're going to continue your present tactics, would you please get something for me?
Why, yes, sir. What?
Small bottle of ether.
Oh, I guess I better go in. It's the only way.
Yes. Now I can get some sleep, I hope.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my. Conductor!
What's wrong, George?
Oh, the fella in there in compartment 60. Oh, my.
What is it?
That man's dead.
I'll get my bottle. Dead, eh?
Yes, sir. D-A-I-D, dead.
Well, I hope your medical diagnosis is better than your spelling.
What happened, Mr. Witherall?
George says the passenger in the compartment between us is dead.
Yeah, go on in, you'll see.
I knew it. I told her there'd be trouble.
Well, let's see. Come into the compartment. He's dead, all right, no matter how you spell it.
Well, who is he?
I don't know. Say, that's funny. This man looks different to me.
Different, George?
Uh-huh.
Well, all men's faces change a little when they die, for the better.
Yeah, I suppose so. Of course, I never did see him so good anyway.
Now, what's up, George?
The old passenger in 6, he's dead.
Yes. Who's this fella?
I believe the phrase is an innocent bystander, conductor. My name is Leonidas Witherall.
Anybody know the name of the dead man?
Evidently not.
All right, I'll wire the police at our next stop. They can take over from there. Now, let's look around and see who this fella is.
Well, you should let Mr. Witherall take charge. He's used to solving murders.
How do you know this man was murdered?
Oh, when Mr. Witherall's around, practically everybody gets murdered after a while.
We don't, Mrs. Mullet. Don't exaggerate.
All right, folks, everybody go back to bed. You're going to be holding your teacher's convention in this compartment.
Say, why not let Mr. Witherall take charge?
Yeah, sure. We all know him.
He's sort of detective.
Are you a detective, mister? You with a beard.
Officially, no. Occasionally, by an odd and unpredictable series of circumstances, yes.
Okay, so you're a detective. Well, get going. Maybe you can help find out who this dead man is.
Well, here's his wallet in his hands. Let me see what's there. His name's Thomas Bridges, 147 Mandalay Boulevard, Boston.
Well, here it is, code. It's a ticket. A return ticket from Chicago.
Chicago? Well, that's strange. So it is.
Well, why is it strange? We're going to Chicago, aren't we?
Yes, but this man asked George to get him off at Cleveland.
Oh. Think he really was bumped off, Mr. Witherall?
Well, there are no signs of violence, conductor.
Mr. Witherall, I just heard. Isn't it too shocking?
Oh, yes, Mr. Lear, very unfortunate.
A heart attack, probably.
Well, probably.
Some people will disobey M.N.
M.N.?
Mother Nature.
Yes?
They strain themselves so.
Oh, okay, QED.
Who's been hurt?
This gentleman on the bed, he's dead.
Well, that's not... Why, that's...
Thomas Bridges?
Yeah, Bridges.
Did you know him?
We met in the diner. And what's your name? Margie. Margie McIntosh.
Conductor, I think it'd be best if we all went back to sleep. When the police come, we can find out exactly what's happened.
Good idea.
Well, Pleasant dreams.
Oh, excuse me, but could you tell me what's happened?
Hey, what are you poking around for, mister?
Well, I'm a writer. I sometimes do newspaper work. My name's Randolph. Danny Randolph.
Man named Bridges just kicked off.
Oh, I see. Well, look, could I just take a look and see... Did you say his name was Bridges?
That's right.
We'll tell you if anything exciting develops after the police arrive, Mr. Randolph.
Well, I'd appreciate it. I'm down car 12. I'd like to know everything that happened.
Huh. Break it up, folks. Everybody back where you belong. I'll turn out the light, Mr. Witherall, and close the door.
Yes, I'll be in the next car if you need me.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Lear.
So will I. But I don't think I can help much.
Well, you never can tell. Good night, Miss McIntyre.
Don't forget to tell me when the police come. Keep me up to the second.
Oh, certainly, Mr. Randolph.
I'll be in car 7 if you want me, Mr. Witherall.
All right, conductor.
Well, I guess I'll be going back to my compartment.
Don't go to your compartment.
Why?
We've got some work to do about the dead man.
Now, don't tell me you're going to go sticking your nose into this. You know, every time you get mixed up in a murder, somebody tries to strangle you.
Wait till the car quiets down. Won't take a second. Then we'll sneak into compartment 6.
What for?
Well, I've been thinking of George's remark that the gentleman in the compartment looked different.
Oh.
Also, the fact that the original passenger in number 6 wanted to get off at Cleveland. And the dead man has a return ticket from Chicago.
Did you say the original passenger?
Yes, the corpse in 6 isn't the man who belongs there at all. I think someone else was there originally.
How can you be sure?
Well, in going through his trunk, I noticed that although it was equipped with a splendid wardrobe, the pajamas were missing. They weren't anywhere in the room. You see, the man who slept in there first must have been wearing them. Ah, the passage is empty and the conductor's obligingly lowered the lights. Come on now. Here's the door. Come in very quietly.
What are you going to do?
Shut the door. That's it. Now hand me those bedroom slippers on the floor.
Here you are.
Thank you. I just tried them on this man. I'll get the shoes off first. There. Now, you see?
They don't fit.
Right. This compartment doesn't belong to Mr. Bridges at all.
Where?
It belongs to someone else. Someone who's wearing pajamas. Someone who undoubtedly has been murdered.
Well, who? Where did he?
Well, where would you look for a dead body, Mrs. Mullet?
In a coffin.
Clever of you.
In a coffin? You mean...
That the real murdered man is in the baggage car. In the coffin, brought here during the funeral. Logical, isn't it? Come on.
You're not going to the baggage car, are you?
I certainly am. Now, someone's guarding that coffin. It's law. So we'll have to dispose of him. Then we can go ahead.
Go ahead? With what?
We can go ahead and open the coffin.
Yes, we can go ahead and open the... Mr. Witherall! See? Peek through this little glass in the door. The man's in there, sitting right beside the coffin.
Miss Mullet, I'll speak to him, and you stand casually beside him. Then, when I nod, you hit him on the head. Use anything you see. Grappling hook, hammer, heavy package, anything.
Mm-hmm, that's easy.
Then we'll open the coffin.
That's hard.
Oh, let's go. I'll open the door.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey. Don't I know you? Yeah. No, yeah. Yeah, you look like, what's the name of that bird?
Not bird, Bard. Shakespeare.
Yeah, that's the bird.
Then you're acquainted with him, eh?
Oh, sure. Not personal. I read two of his plays, Romeo and Juliet.
Who?
Who's the dame?
What's that?
Mrs. Mullet, meet, what's the bird?
Huh? Oh, my name's Benny. Hiya. Hey, what are you two doing back here?
Oh, we got restless and walked through the train and found ourselves back here. Who, guarding that coffin, eh, Benny?
Yeah. Why don't you sit down on a 6-foot bungalow there and we'll split the breeze. You know, I got a great acquaintance with the works of Shakespeare. A lot of his stuff's been dramatized, you know.
Oh, you don't say.
Yeah, I know all about it. All about his tragedies and comedies and errors.
Say, anything happened tonight while you were watching the coffin, Benny?
Huh? Nah.
Well, anyone speak to you tonight? Any strangers?
Yeah, I don't know any. Mm-hmm. I just squat here watching after my boyfriend in the fine overcoat.
No.
Had a nice idea for him, too. You know what? I wanted to put one of them pretty flower horseshoes on the box. You know, the ones that say success.
Benny, there's been a murder on this train.
Kind of a nut. What?
And I'm investigating it.
You are?
And
you are?
You're very much in the way. Now, Mrs. Mullet.
I'll get him.
Tell you, Midsummer Night's Dream.
I'll hide, Benny, behind these mailbags.
Here, I'll help you.
Fine. Now I'll take this grappling hook and get at that coffin.
Do you have to do that?
It's no time to be nervous. Got this side up. Now, the other. let me nail this down hard.
Oh, it's very bad luck to open a coffin. There's no telling what's inside. Are you sure you have to do that?
Now I can pick up the whole lid. Ready, Mrs. Mullet?
Well, I'm as ready as I ever will be.
Don't behave so foolishly. Coffin's been opened before. Body snatchers do it regularly.
Well, not when I was around.
Oh, well, here goes.
Why, it's a man in pajamas. And he's been stabbed.
Just as I thought. Someone stabbed this man during the middle of the night. And then exchanged his dead body for the corpse in this coffin. They switched it, you see, with Bridges' body.
But why would they do that?
Cover up. This chap, whoever he is, would disappear completely, you see. He was last seen boarding this train and then vanished as if by magic. By the time his friends or relatives discovered anything was wrong, he would have been buried in this coffin.
Well, what would happen to Bridges?
Well, I'm sure Mr. Bridges was selected because he's the type of man nobody would be looking for.
Oh.
Bridges' death would be discovered by the coroner as a heart attack, which it probably was. And that would clear the killer completely, you see. Now, our first problem is, who is this man? And secondly, who played checkers with the two cadavers?
I'll bet that Benny over there knows.
Then we'd better revive him.
Wait. Look down the corridor.
What?
Someone's coming. It's that newspaper man, Danny Randall. Oh,
quick, hide behind these mail sacks. Duck behind here with me.
All right. Is this all right? You think they can see us?
No, no, this is fine.
You see the open coffin?
That's just what I want.
Shh. Holy smokes. Margie, what are you doing here?
Shut up. Not so loud. You noticed the same thing, huh? The wrong guy in Sparrow's compartment.
Yeah, I figured somebody pulled a switch. There he is. See him in the coffin?
Yeah. I'll bet you can explain how it happened.
Are you crazy? I did tell when I saw that stiff in Sparrow's place. How'd you ever manage it?
You sap. You don't think I stabbed him, do you?
Why not? He double-crossed you.
How about you? You really wrote the big shot. Sparrow stole it from you.
I was going to collect from him on this train tonight. You don't think I'd knife him and lose the dough, would you?
Well, maybe he was a big boy himself. He'd do anything to keep that book from being published.
It might have been His Royal Highness, yeah. Maybe that...
I could make things very hot for you, Danny. I could shoot my mouth off about Sparrow taking your book. That'd give you a terrific motive.
Yeah, and I could tell a cute Leon about how you got to swear he wrote it. And then told you to go jump in the drink.
We don't have to be nasty to each other, Danny. We could be friends again. I've always been kind of sorry we broke up. Haven't you?
First you had me, and then you cashed me in for Sparrow. Now he's gone, you figure you'll take me back. You're a high-class twist, ain't you?
I'll keep quiet. We can take up where we left off.
Yeah, sure. I could trust you.
Wanna kiss and make up?
So you can get the dough from the book, huh? Go on, scram before I push your face in.
But, Danny...
I'm getting out of here. This guy's no place to be with Sparrow lying in that coffin.
Wait, Danny...
Let me alone and keep your trap shut.
Danny, come back! Danny, wait a minute. Quite a girl, ain't she?
Yes, a charming twist.
Do you think she killed Sparrow, or did Danny do it?
You've forgotten the suggestion Danny made himself. Maybe it was the gentleman they called the Big Shot, who's about to be exposed by that book.
Well, how can you find out who it was?
Well, it seems rather simple to me. Since this is all because of the manuscript of a book, whoever has that script is the killer. We'll have to search for it in their berths, in Margie's, Danny's, and...
Well, Ben. How do you search the Big Shot? You don't know who he is.
At least I can eliminate the first two. Mrs. Mullet, how's your screen these days?
Well, after seeing you open that coffin, should be very good.
Well, I want you to stand at one end of that car up front and scream for all you're worth.
All right.
Then lead everyone on a merry chase all through the train. I want about 3 or 4 minutes of confusion to examine Margie's and Danny's luggage.
Suppose the manuscript ain't there.
Then we know the Big Shot did the killing and we'll have to find him. Let's go up front.
All right.
Leave Benny there. He seems to be resting so peacefully. Probably dreaming about those two plays, Romeo and Juliet. Come on. Ready, Mrs. Mullet?
Ready, Mr. Witherall.
Go on.
Well, I kept them all chasing me for 5 minutes. Find the manuscript, Mr. Witherall?
Yes, I did, and I left it where I found it, too.
Who had it?
It was in...
Here's the station, Mr. Witherall.
Police will come on. We can get to the bottom of this now.
I'm so glad the police are here. I was getting so upset.
Yes, I imagine this has been quite a strain for you, Miss Twist.
Huh?
Beg pardon, Miss McIntosh.
What do you mean?
Cops will be coming on now, huh?
Yep, Mr. Randolph. Everybody stay right here.
Oh, I'm so glad we'll know if anything suspicious is going on. I couldn't sleep thinking about this. Couldn't sleep at all. And that's so bad. Suspense causes an unfavorable glandular reaction.
Page Mother Nature, Mr. Lear.
Oh, my head. I ought to have a doctor. I ought to insult a physician.
Why, Benny!
Ah, there you are, huh? Hey, listen, what's the idea of
Bobbin? We're just going to discuss the whole problem, Benny. I see down by the end of the car there that the police have arrived.
Police?
Yep. Come on down here, officer.
Okay. Where's the body you're worried about?
Right in there, compartment 6. It's a man named Bridges.
Officer, I think I can explain what's happened.
Who are you?
He's Leonidas Witherall, head of Meredith Academy. Mr. Witherall's a very good detective.
Oh, I'm not a professional detective, but I can tell you about the murder that's taking place.
Murder?
Was Bridges murdered?
No, his body was secured somewhere so that a false funeral might be arranged and his body in the coffin might be placed on this train. The murdered man was named Sparrow. Sparrow originally occupied this compartment.
Shakespeare nothing. Sherlock Holmes.
I'm glad you spoke up, Benny. Benny was a part of the plan, obviously. He was working for a man identified only as the Big Shot. To keep Sparrow from printing a book about his activities, this Big Shot hired Benny to kill Sparrow, steal the manuscript, and switch the bodies.
Sparrow's body's in the baggage car, officer, with a long knife in the side. I saw it.
So, Benny...
I didn't stab no Sparrow.
I know you didn't, Benny. Because you haven't got the manuscript in question. I found the script in the real murderer's luggage.
Whose luggage was it?
When Benny arrived at compartment 6, someone had already put a knife into Sparrow. But Benny, faithfully executing his orders, switched the bodies anyway.
Where'd you find the manuscript?
Now, Benny's error helped the murderer considerably. Sparrow had disappeared. No one would ever know where he'd gone.
Come on. Where'd you find the script?
Now, that's the key to the whole problem, isn't it, Margie?
Who has it? Yes, who done this?
Come on, if you're such a detective.
Tell us, Mr. Witherall, tell us.
Well, go on.
I found it in Danny's briefcase.
You what?
It was in your briefcase, Danny. You killed Sparrow.
Don't try to get off this train, Danny. You make a dive for that platform, I'll put 6 slugs in your back.
Danny, you did do it.
And he stole my book. I would have made a fortune out of it. And tonight, in his compartment, he wouldn't pay off. We had a fight. Well, there was a knife on the table. We both went for it. And I won. That's all. I risked my life to write that book. I wouldn't let any man live who took it away from me. And least of all, Sparrow the skunk.
Sparrow the skunk? Oh, your biological background is deplorable, Danny. Deplorable.
We'll take both bodies off. You come with me, Danny.
Well, Miss Witherall, that was excellent. Excellent. You've a brilliant mind. You must lead a very clean, healthful life.
Yes, Mr. Lear. And I wish you did, too.
What do you mean?
Mr. Lear, when I saw the manuscript in Danny's briefcase, I glanced for a second at a few pages. I learned who this national criminal is, the Big Shot, the man who hired Benny and arranged the funeral.
You sneaking, crummy, busybody.
This guy.
It was Mr. Lear. This nice little man with the butterflies.
Yes, this nice little man is the Big Shot. You'd better take him with you too, officer.
Another crook. Boy, it's going to take a lot of blue points to get all these people out of the can.
All right, let's go, Danny. Come on, you.
I'm coming.
Quit shoving, copper. I can walk on my own.
No, conductor, I think we can continue on our way to Chicago and the convention. It'll seem so anticlimactic now, I suppose.
Everybody go back to your berths. As soon as we get the bodies off, we'll leave.
And I go to sleep at last. Sleep. I'm so tired. So tired. As the gentleman I'm supposed to resemble has written, sleep that knits up the raveled sleeve of care.
Shut the doors!
The death of each day's life, sore labor's bath.
I'll fix that mattress, mister.
Balm of hurt minds, great nature's second course.
Well, somebody fell off the ladder climbing into an upper berth.
Chief nourisher in life's feast, sleep.
WOR has presented the distinguished American actor, Walter Hamden, in The Adventures of Leonidas Witherall. Mrs. Mullet is played by Ethel Ramey. The character of Leonidas Witherall is from the mystery novels by Alice Tilton. The radio script is by Howard Merrill, and the program is directed by Roger Barr. Witherall's involved in a history-making event next week, isn't he, Mr. Hamden?
Yes, the next week's story is about that miraculous and infinitely rare event, a nylon sale. It's a delightful and very exciting adventure in homicide, and I hope you'll be listening next Sunday at 7. Now, good night.
Listen again next Sunday at 7 p.m. for Walter Hamden in The Adventures of Leonidas Witherell. This program came to you from the studios of WOR in New York. This is Mutual.
That was Murder on the Train from The Adventures of Leonidas Witherell here on the Mysterious Old Radio Listening Society podcast. Once again, I'm Eric.
I'm Tim.
And I'm Joshua.
That was Tim's Christmas present to Joshua this year. I just want to say there's no way this could have succeeded as a radio drama for the mere fact that what you'll never know as a listener to this podcast is how many times we had to start over and re-record the phrase Leonidas Witherell. It does not trip off the tongue. It is not a great... By the way, let me just go back to our opening here. Dillis Wynn, Phoebe Atwood Taylor, Leonidas Witherell.
You mispronounced it. We have to do another take.
Ethel Remy. It goes on. That entire opening was like, this is all made up names. Ridiculous.
Yeah, these are all Lord of the Rings characters.
Yeah. Right? Right?
The vocal coaches use these scripts to train actors.
Well, I'll let you go, Joshua. Here we go. What do you think of your Christmas present?
You guys can't see this, but they are just staring at me. In all sincerity, I loved it. I really did. And I tried to psych myself up to be as honest as possible. I was like, you know what? Tim said, just say if you don't like it. So I hadn't listened to it yet. And I was like, I'm going to be critical.
Having not listened to it, I hate it.
Yes. So I approached it as objectively as I could. And I just, 30 seconds in, was laughing and doubled over. An interesting perspective is I did decide ahead of time that I wanted to approach this differently than how I listened to other radio shows for the podcast, because this was presented to me as a gift. So I went, I'm going to listen to it as close to when we record as possible. I'm not going to take notes. I want to just listen to it like I would a friend recommended something I'd really like.
Oh, nice.
And then early this morning, I woke up and realized I have no idea what this is. What if Tim gave me something like Death and the Compass, something I was like, oh, Josh would really love to unpack this, and
right,
it's super complicated. And I went, oh, no, maybe I'm going to get up a little earlier and give this a better listen. And so then when I heard what it was even funnier to me.
Right.
There's no unpacking. This is great.
Right.
Were you familiar with this detective line of novels?
Not at all. Not at the radio show, not the novels. Nothing.
I've read all of them.
You liar.
It's a weird concept.
It's so weird.
Comedy concept. It's intended to be funny. It's not someone trying really hard to make this as dramatic as possible.
No.
That opening had me hooked, because the idea of a random gossiping voices providing both exposition and an intro to your show,
right,
of the whole he's always getting mixed up in murder, and yes, he looks like Shakespeare, it's the beard, oh, and he's the head of a school, and he writes mystery novels, and it just delighted me beyond words, because it gets across the intentionality of the silliness you're about to hear.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that it's smart but silly.
As far as I know, all that exposition has no impact on what any of the stories. Like,
no.
The fact that he writes novels doesn't matter.
Yeah, none of it comes into play.
I'm guessing in the novels, all that is probably more important.
Yes.
But again, as the excerpts from critics of the day seem to say,
maybe not.
Maybe not.
Yes. I wonder if the next episode is him at the convention.
I love that description of what convention. A convention is.
Because that's exactly... What's interesting, what year is this?
1940...
No, it doesn't matter. 1940-something?
44, probably.
Conventions our conventions. There's no change, and no one has learned a damn thing about how to do a convention better.
It also describes social media today, too.
Yeah. You know?
Nobody listens, and then everyone disagrees.
The only good thing about conventions is that the business, whatever it is that's running it, gets it in their head now and then that we need some actors in here to spice this thing up, and I make some money off of it. Or they need a host.
In my head, all 1944 conventions are just guys with fezes on their heads and
yeah,
covered in some confetti.
And they've all snuck out to get there and not told their wives like Laurel and Hardy.
I once hosted a convention. I'm off the rails here, but, you know, trains. I once hosted a convention that I got paid to host. I won't mention the company, but it was 700,000 people. A lot of people. It wasn't about the thermostat that they made. It was about a trigger in the thermostat that this...
Wow!
So the entire convention was for this triggering device inside this thermostat. It was crazy. It was so specific, and there was hours and hours of talking. Booths set up, and then I got the... Make this funny. Make it interesting. I ran through all my thermostat jokes in about a minute.
You know, as silly as this episode is, it does a number of clever structural things, or one clever structural thing, the tease at the top, which we are often critics of in old-time radio, that it gives away the plot, but they totally cheated.
It's yes.
edited. And not only that, but it allowed for a nice surprise, considering this is the only episode of this that I've ever heard, and that is the subversion of expectations with Mrs. Mullen, that she is not a shrieking woman. He's okay, so you go stand by him, find anything to hit him over the head with, a grappling hook, a hammer, it's brutal. And she's like, sure, got it. And then the guy's carrying on about Shakespeare, which is my favorite scene in the entire play, and then he's like, okay, hit her. Okay, hit her. Okay. And it's just, it's great. And then the scream is a totally fake diversion scream. It's not a helpless housekeeper. So I loved it for that alone.
How about the plot itself? I thought it was okay.
Yeah. I mean, and not in a Minnesota okay. It's like, pretty good.
I mean, I think the mystery...
The solution to the mystery is search the rooms, see who has the one thing, and then that's your killer.
It's predictable, but all the elements and the cast of characters as suspects are all really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
By the end, it was very clear to me that, I can't remember his name, the butterfly guy was the big shot.
Yes.
They were giving him too much attention. But at the same time, I guess because it's a comedy episode, you might suspect that he's just there for jokes.
You got me. I had no idea. I was caught off guard when he was Mr. Big Guy. Mr. Guy Big.
Big Shot.
Shot. Whatever.
It's a strange premise, though,
that it's
mobsters writing a tell-all book that they're fighting over, but it makes them a target for murder.
That's The Godfather, the tell-all book, that was written and...
Puzo, is that the guy who wrote that?
It's
Puzo.
Based on fact, but it's not biographical.
No, I may be thinking of an episode of Law & Order. I am.
Mobsters turning state evidence for protection happens all the time, but these guys are just writing a book and fighting over the authorship of it.
Yeah, interesting that someone, you have written a tell-all book that's going to put your life in danger, so I'm going to steal it so I can publish it.
And put my life in danger.
Right, and I'm going to fight you on that.
And get all that big, big, I wrote a book money. you're in for a sad surprise.
We're going on Easy Street. I wrote a book.
But so that was the fun of it. This is strange elements, like mobsters fighting over the authorship of a tell-all book, two other thugs bringing a mysterious coffin on board the train, a mob of New England school teachers who demand that the guy who looks like William Shakespeare be put in charge of this murder immediately.
Right. It's right.
It was just joyful. But my favorite, as I already said, is the scene with the thug guarding the coffin who wants to talk about Shakespeare.
Yeah.
The best joke, it's a solid joke, is I've read two plays by Shakespeare, Romeo and Juliet. They shouldn't have gone back for it a second time, but that was funny.
What was the joke about the doctor? I got to go get insulted by a doctor.
Or like, they dramatize a lot of Shakespeare stuff. And it's great because it's delivered as a throwaway joke. It's not emphasized as a big punchline, but it made me laugh. And he's still going on about Twelfth Night or something right before he gets hit with a grappling hook.
Well, and the whole closing scene of him trying to recite a monologue that
just a farce.
Someone fell off a ladder. Like there's constant pratfalls going on around him. I didn't quite understand what was going on, but in my head he's trying to recite something and noises off is going on.
The train is taking off and there are people yelling and screaming in the background. Yeah. I think someone tells him directly to shut up or close his door.
Close the door.
You're going to do monologue, shut your door. And then it was fascinating because I'm pretty sure they actually cast a person of color to play George the porter.
Yeah,
and he is largely portrayed as competent.
Almost got through without any sort of derogatory, and then they hit the spelling joke. I'm like, that's too
bad. And I think it's probably was a racialized joke. However, in this script, everyone's an idiot, as we've pointed out,
right? Yes.
And they're all foolish. It was a cheap joke, but it did not go on to define his character.
I was also really interested because there's a whole story of the porters, the black men who got work on Pullman cars as porters. They were all named George in a sort of insulting... I think it was earlier than this, but they weren't allowed to use the real names. They were treated as George Pullman's boys.
Wow, I had no idea.
It's part of the history of tipping. That they weren't paid, they only worked for tips, but it became actually a really lucrative job for people of color. The Porter stories is really interesting. That was part of the reason I liked this episode, is like, there's a lot to unpack in just that one character.
I just learned a whole bunch of stuff, and I'm also sad. Thank you, Tim.
There are a lot of really funny lines in here. A couple weird ones, too, but who played checkers with the two cadavers? suspense causes an unfavorable glandular reaction, which made me think, was that the original tagline of Suspense? A play well calculated to agitate your glands. But there's that one line where Witherall says, all men's faces change a little when they die, for the better.
Like, what?
That's kind of creepy and dark.
Yep.
Okay, well, he is a bit of a misanthrope. As portrayed in this, which I think also made him fun.
Yeah.
There was a sense that he was better than everyone because he looks like William Shakespeare.
Right.
The last thing I wanted to say about this that I admired is, for such a silly show, I felt like the sound design was really good. The train station, the sound of the bells and the whistles. And
falling off a ladder.
Yeah, but the voices and the departure announcements used as kind of transitions between scenes. I think that's important even in something as light and fluffy as this, because that's that key component to theater of the mind that keeps your imagination engaged, even though there aren't serious stakes.
That's a great point. I didn't even think about that, but you're right. It was really well produced.
I listened to most, if not all, of the other episodes, and part of the reason I chose this one is I think this one, the story holds together the best. I think the silliness and chaos is a bigger part of the other episodes, although you can listen for yourself. And
I'm going to. I found this delightful.
Well, if we got nothing else to say, why don't you just keep rolling and give us your vote?
Yeah, I mean, I think Tim picked something that really appeals to me. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to call this a classic, you must listen to this to really understand old time radio, but I think a lot about it does stand the test of time. The very self-aware humor, the pace is really zippy, and I think the subverted stereotypes are interesting from a modern perspective. I also think we have a lot of current entertainment in this mold. It reminded me of Monk.
Mm.
That is a comedy mystery. And the comedy of Monk is very broad. It's maybe anchored more by a like emotional tragedy.
Similar sort of misanthropic hero.
Yeah, but I feel like it definitely stands the test of time. And I'm not only going to listen to more of these, I'm going to try to hunt down some of these novels. So, Tim, it is the gift that keeps giving.
Oh, lovely.
Thank you.
This was a really good Christmas present for Joshua.
I should also thank Eric for listening to it.
Yeah.
I like this very similar in the way that Joshua does, that it's not a classic, but it's there's a really a lot to love there, and in a very Zan's Test of Time way. I'm amazed we're doing this for so many years to find things we've never heard before.
Yes. How did we never hear of this? Like, at this point, we should have heard of every radio show, don't you think?
I feel like it, but it's just an exciting sense of, like, I can keep finding things.
Right?
History keeps giving me stuff. Thanks, history.
So, yeah, I was astonished that you found something. You're like a radio drama archaeologist.
I was thinking more like a truffle-hunting pig. But close.
Wow. Merry Christmas, Tim.
I want the adventures of a truffle hunting pig going through Egypt.
I knew Tim would like it.
Well, Tim, keep telling him stuff.
Throw me the whip. Throw me the truffle. Please go visit ghoulishdelights.com. That is the home of this podcast. There are many other episodes there. You can comment on episodes. Let us know what you thought. Vote in polls. Send us messages. Peruse around looking for your favorite titles or series and see what all we've done from those series. You can link to our Threadless store and buy Mysterious Old Radio swag. And you can go find our Patreon page.
Yes, go to patreon.com/themorals and support this podcast. If you do support it, you receive many great rewards, including Secrets of the Mysterious Old Radio. And I bring that up because often the type of radio shows we listen to on Secrets are these oddball outlier shows like this. So if you enjoyed this, there's Secrets of the Mysterious Old Radio waiting behind a paywall for you. If you didn't enjoy this, there are a lot of other things that aren't like this that are also our rewards. So really, you have no excuse not to go to patreon.com/themorals and support this podcast or gift the support of this podcast to someone else for the holiday season.
Bad truffles. If you'd like to see us perform live, we do recreations, our theater company of Mysterious Old Radio Listening Society, of classic radio drama and adaptations of that, plus a lot of our own original work about doing audio theater. If you'd like to see where we're performing, when, and what we're performing, just go to MysteriousOldRadioListeningSociety.com or GhoulishDelights.com, and there you'll see our next performance and how to get tickets. If you can't make it to the show live, you can watch us online. So what's coming up next?
Next, we will be listening to an episode of The New Adventures of Nero Wolfe entitled The Case of the Slaughtered Santas. Until then...
Cut the doors!